Support for Connecticut East this week comes from Reality Interactive, helping your business create seamless and memorable digital experiences for your customers. Find out more at realityi.com. Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, here to help individuals and families affected by gambling-related harm. Call 1-888-789-7777 or visit our website at ccpg.org. Thames at Mitchell College, a holistic on-campus program that helps high school graduates prepare for college through personal transformation. Go to mitchell.edu/Thames to learn more. And Day Kimball Health, nationally recognized by Leapfrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health, healthcare in motion. Learn more at daykimball.org. It's our 200th episode. And to celebrate this milestone, we sat down with the town of Manchester, who are continuing to celebrate their 200th birthday, looking at their past, present, and future. Plus, we take a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott Smith. We've hit another milestone in our short history as a radio podcast as we celebrate our 200th episode, and we want to take this opportunity to say thank you to all of our listeners and our sponsors for continuing to listen to and support the show each week. And what better way to highlight this achievement than to talk about something else that's hit its 200th as well. In this case, we're talking about the town of Manchester in Connecticut. Their 200th birthday celebration started back in May of 2023 for them, so they're still in their birthday year until May of 2024. I sat down with Steve Stefano, Manchester's town manager, and Chris Silver and Kathleen Maguire of the town's Leisure, Families and Recreation Department to delve into their 200-year history.
To the three of you, thanks ever so much for being on Connecticut East this week. Now, even with your combined ages, you don't come to 200, but we are talking about Manchester 200. Obviously, belated 200th birthday, because it was technically 2023, but I was just talking, Chris, to you before we started recording. You said, well, you know, it was like May of 1823 when the town was incorporated. So I'm going to go on the basis of it's the end of March, so we're still in the birthday year. So I think that's allowable. Steve, town manager, great town, 200 years come up. That's a big birthday. I mean, how did you start to even think about what it was you wanted to do to celebrate 200 years of the great town of Manchester?
Great question. Manchester has historically always celebrated major milestones, and actually the centennial celebration back in 1923 was a big event here. So was the 150th. So we had been talking about, and there had been people that actually been involved with those previous milestone birthdays, including our former mayor of ours, Nate Agostinelli, who is a sort of towering Manchester figure, Joe Camposio, our former town clerk. They were involved, I think, both in the 150 and maybe the 175. And they'd come to me several years ago and said, hey, Steve, let's start thinking about 200 years. So we as a town had been ready to, you know, celebrate what is a historic milestone for Manchester. And I think what we really tried to do, and Chris and Kathy can talk about this more, but is celebrate our history, but also really try and center the present and what Manchester's going to be over the next 100, 200 years. And we're incredibly dynamic, I think, especially for Connecticut. We're incredibly diverse, and that's something we wanted to lean into. So highlighting our past, our proud history, but also focusing on what we are now in 2023 and 2024, and what we're going to be over the next several decades going forward.
So Chris and Kathleen, a lot of that fell to you because you are the Leisure, Families and Recreation Department, which is a fabulous title. It covers all sorts of things. Chris, give us an idea. Steve's just told us that this was the remit. These are some of the people that have been spoken to. Then between everyone, it had to happen. How do you go about even beginning to organize something like this?
Well, it was a delicate process. As Steve said, there were former planners and organizers from previous celebrations that really wanted to be involved with this one. And there was also the Manchester Historical Society that wanted to be involved. involved from the historical perspective and sort of getting those true narratives across to the community based on our past. So it was important for us, and we really weren't even going to be part of the planning group initially, but these two groups were very strong about it, and we wanted to make sure that both of them were included. So the decision was, let's work with this department where we have a lot of reach and access and resources. We'll facilitate the process. We'll work with both groups in addition to other partners and organizations in town that wanted to be a part of it. So that's where we got started. That very beginning part was important. We didn't want to upset anyone. We wanted everyone to be involved. So being inclusive was important at the very beginning.
Kathy, it's a delicate situation. As Chris just said, you don't want to upset anybody. You want to try and be as inclusive as possible. So that must have created a few headaches.
A few, but I think pretty quickly we got a good working group together, is what we sort of called it. We didn't want there to be a chairperson or a committee lead. We really wanted it to be a group effort. And I think that's how we came up with including everyone. So everybody had a seat at the table. And what we really wanted this to be was people who are willing to sort of dig in and work with us, not sort of just be a commemorative lead or, you know, hey, my name goes on stuff, but I don't really do much. So we got a bunch of people together, including the Historical Society, including the groups that came initially and said, hey, we're going to get together, but we're all going to work on this and sort of build a team and come up with ideas and come up with what the scope of this whole year will look like. And that's really, and it really worked. It worked out really great.
What were some of the things that, you know, really came up that, you know, ultimately made their way to, you know, the celebration?
Yeah, that took some time. I mean, we were a little behind the eight ball getting started, but I think we pretty quickly got, we rolled up our sleeves and were like, let's go. To Steve's point, we wanted to remember what Manchester was, where we came from, who was here first, and the history of Manchester. But then we also wanted to celebrate who we are today, right? This wonderful, diverse community, and looking to the future of like, what will Manchester become? And there's a lot of projects in the pipeline that are going to reimagine Manchester in the next 10, 15, 20 years. So we wanted to give a nod to that too. So we really started digging in with like, what can we do that celebrates who Manchester was? Let's look at some projects there. How can we celebrate where we are here? And then, you know, what can kind of feel futuristic and feel like, hey, this is going to be really what Manchester is looking to become.
Saying that we went into it late, we weren't, you know, dragging our feet. It was really tough to decide who was going to run the celebration. So I think that is what took a little time. But what we knew we had to do right off the beginning was to put together a fast track for this celebration, because where 2 years in the past people had to plan, we had less than a year. So putting together a working team, staying away from the formality of committees, egos, etc. We wanted doers and workers, and that's exactly what we got, and that's how we organized and moved forward quickly. We brand and develop a marketing plan right off the bat. The branding was the most important, the identity for the celebration. That allowed us to create a marketing campaign that built up the celebration for our launch in January of 2023.
In a way, was the fact that you did have only a year actually a good thing? Because like you said, sometimes these things can drag out, and then suddenly when you're hit with this, like, you've got a year to do this, let's get on and do it, actually sounds like a golden opportunity just to move things along.
It was a golden opportunity. Because, and with a working team allowing us as facilitators to make quick decisions, and some decisions we had to make independently, but we knew that going into it with a little time before the launch that we had, I guess, the flexibility or the freedom to make decisions faster than, whereas if we had 2 years, we might have been a little bit more. And the other important piece of this too, in terms of the fast tracking, you know, the important thing is that we need to engage the community to see what they wanted. And we didn't have time to do that. But what we did do was develop a grant program to create grant partners within the community. So if you're a nonprofit organization, a group, wanted to plan or help celebrate and offer something for the community, then you could competitively apply and receive funding and do whatever it is you wanted, as long as it met the requirements of the grant. And we ended up awarding close to $40,000 in funding for multiple celebrations and commemorative projects around town.
Steve, I want to get back to you. Obviously, as town manager, it's an important thing. Any of these events, you know, they're so front-facing, you want them to be successful. Obviously, Kathy and Chris have explained, you know, how it was all happening. What was some of your favorites looking back at the celebrations? You know, what were some of your favorites sort of like events that actually came out of the 200th anniversary?
Good question. I'll give you a couple different answers. So one was member of our town historian, Susan Barlow. She did a series of walks around Manchester highlighting sort of significant historical areas. Was it 23 mm-hmm. that she did, right? 1823, 2023. On a bigger scale, was it the Heritage Day that we did down at the Mary Cheney and the park in the Center Park?
Yeah, that was the Reflect, Celebrate, and Dream celebration with the time capsule that we did in conjunction with Second Saturdays, which are downtown events.
So that was a really nice event. It actually, it turns out, so I was born and raised in Manchester, so was my wife. And the time capsule from the 175th anniversary, she actually had something when she was in elementary school that we dug out a letter. And some of our other friends who we're still in touch with were there as part of that. So that was really cool. And then I think my favorite event was our Lights in the Sky, which was a drone show that we did in September. Just a perfect fall evening at Northwest Park, one of our sort of premier areas, just incredibly well attended, showcasing everything that's great about Manchester, people from all walks of life, young, old, just people having a great time. And then it ended with a tremendous documentary that was put on with the work of Chris and Kathy, and then a drone show in the sky, which was great.
Drones are absolutely amazing, aren't they? Because, yeah. You know, fireworks are fabulous, but drones just go that extra mile, don't they? And you can create so many amazing things. I take it you've done a time capsule for the 200th, have you?
Yes.
What sort of stuff was put in there as another piece of your wife's memorabilia made it into?
Unfortunately, no.
We wanted this time capsule to really be about story preservation, and that was a big theme of this year, this celebration, this 200, was preserving stories, whether they are from the past or currently. For this time capsule, we had stories from all the youth in Manchester, so from kindergarten or preschool all the way up to high school, kids could put in poetry or a story about themselves or a letter to themselves or a piece of artwork, and it really was encapsulating our voices of our youngest, you know, citizens, residents, and keeping their stories preserved for the next 25, or maybe it's 50. I don't remember what we did, but, and they're sealed and they're buried, and hopefully will be dug up in 50 years from now or 25 years from now, and people can take a look and see what was going on now and see their artwork and their stories and what they felt about Manchester at that time.
Yeah, that's a great thing to do, is to sort of be able to look back at that. And of course, as I don't need to tell you, but for the listeners who may not know a lot about Manchester, it has a great history. It was the center of the silk industry in the United States back then. You've got a big population here. You've got around just under 60,000, I believe, from the latest census. That makes you one of the biggest town-stroke cities in Connecticut, not far from Hartford, of course. But one of the other great things that you're famous for, and you've been famous, and this is coming up for its 100th anniversary in a few years, of course, is the Manchester Road Race, which I did some digging around. I've heard of it. I know when it happens. It's on Thanksgiving, which is a great excuse to get away from the family for a while and then go and eat. But I didn't realize in New England, it is the second most popular race mm-hmm. after the Boston Marathon. Steve, that's phenomenal for, you know, what is effectively, as I say, a smaller city compared to somewhere like Boston, which you know well. You've got a history with Boston. It is a great road race. Another little fun fact that I found out is that when it actually started back in 1927, there were only 12 participants. Of course, it's grown considerably since then.
Yeah, no, thank you for actually bringing up the road race. So it's by far, hands down, my favorite 3 hours of the year. Anyone who's been there has experienced it, I think, comes away with a tremendously positive impression. Actually, this isn't a great podcast, but I have a picture in my office that Brian can see, which is of the road race, which is just swarms of runners and onlookers. So we have anywhere between 10 to 12, I think the highest was 15,000 registered runners. We do get some people that come and don't register, so it gets a little higher than that, and anywhere between 35 and 40,000 onlookers. And it's just a tremendous day. People will dress up in costumes. It's just under 5 miles. Positive spirit, sort of festive vibes of the morning is just fantastic. I've actually run it every year since I was in middle school, so like maybe 21 years. My father's run it. This was his 40th. So there's a lot of family connections. People that have moved away will come back. If you're from Manchester, Thanksgiving in Manchester, the sort of slogan, the longtime race director, Jim Balcom, was famous for saying, this is Thanksgiving in Manchester. And if you've experienced, you know exactly what that means. mean. So, Brian, you're going to have to come this year.
Yes, absolutely, because I think I can do just under 5 miles, because it's about 4.748 miles, which is an unusual sort of like distance for a race. But the interesting thing about it, like any race, it's highly competitive, but it's fun as well. And you get people from everywhere. I mean, you've had Olympians come, mm-hmm. you've had sort of like seasoned runners. I mean, people come here looking to, you know, to get that win and that sort of like that fast time as well. Like I said, it is an incredible race. And obviously, it's the most famous one here in Connecticut. And like I said, you know, second only in New England, you know, to the Boston Marathon. I mean, that is just absolutely phenomenal. Let's talk about, you know, where the 200th anniversary was about reflecting on the past, but also looking forward to the future as well. Lots happening in Manchester, which is great to see, because we don't like to keep mentioning the pandemic, but, you know, we can't ignore it. We all had to deal with it. We're coming post out of it. And, you know, it caused a lot of issues, a lot of problems. And, you know, and every city, every town is now sort of like getting themselves back on their feet and doing a lot of things that, you know, obviously didn't happen back then. Let's talk about two things quickly with you guys. You've got a great school here. I believe it's actually an old 1940s school. The Buckley Elementary School has become the first net zero energy verification school in Connecticut. Why was that important, Steve? And what does it really mean?
The credit goes to our town's elected body, the board of directors, for prioritizing from a policy perspective sustainability and reducing the town's carbon footprint. And now with modern technology, with a combination of solar panels and the ability to do geothermal wells on site, which allows for heating at the building, Buckley was the first of three schools that are being renovated as like new. They're anywhere from the 40s to the 50s. They haven't been updated. The final one is being done now, and all three of them are actually going to end up being net zero because of the direction that we received from the board. The state of Connecticut, is the case with all publicly funded schools, pays for about two-thirds of this, so they've also been a great partner with us in achieving this milestone. But yes, we're incredibly happy, and about 2 months ago, we got verification of the net zero status, which is the first one in Connecticut. And it's actually the first publicly funded K-12 school in New England to achieve that status. So incredibly proud of that.
And of course, more improvements will be happening to downtown Manchester as well. Between the three of you, talk to us a little bit about that, because that's sort of quite an ongoing process. You want public input into that. It's going to take some time, because I had a quick look at the plan before I came here to do the interview, and there is a lot on that plan that you want to do, including things like closed street on Main Street. You want to have bike lanes and things. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. 30,000 foot view is that I think one of Manchester's biggest assets is our downtown, our Main Street. We have a historic downtown. I actually have another picture in my office of that was downtown at the turn of the century.
We're just going to quickly explain for the listeners. It is effectively a dirt road with trees, and it looks like there's one car on there, which if you've been to Manchester and Main Street, it certainly doesn't look like that anymore.
So, but it really is kind of out of futures. Have a idyllic, stereotypical thought of what a American Main Street is. That's what we have here. And it suffered greatly, like a lot of downtowns in the 80s and the 90s, as we saw this sort of suburban sprawl. We had a mall, which is still doing well and we're happy to have here in Manchester, but that took away some activity from the downtown. Over the past decade, there's really been a revitalization. We have breweries, we have great restaurants, we have coffee shops, small businesses, and there's a real sense of vibrancy and energy. And what we're trying to do with a lot of these investments, including the streetscape project, is leverage and capitalize that to improve even more. Because right now we're seeing people are choosing places to live based on the quality of life. You know, it used to be that people followed the jobs, and now it's jobs following the people. And I think it's important for local government to be proactive about that and create a place where people do want to locate. What's great about Manchester is that we have this urban area where you kind of feel like you're, you know, in a nice little small city. We also have 5 minute drive and you're in Case Mountain in the middle of the woods and you feel like you're in the middle of Vermont. That's what's great about Manchester. That's, you know, not only the diversity of our people, but the diversity of our locations. Long story short, between the streetscape project, which is looking to perform a lot of needed updates just to the infrastructure of the stretch between Main Street and Center Street, updating the traffic signals, but also reducing the number of lanes in what's called a road diet, which is increasingly popular option for urban corridors to reduce the amount of potential fatalities. We've had some here. The sort of complete streets policy mindset, also including a bike lane, because we want to not only encourage people to drive here, but also to walk here, to ride their bikes, and just create, you know, a sense of vibrancy and walkability here in downtown. Beyond that, we're also going to be building a brand new 21st century state-of-the-art library in the heart of our downtown. That was approved by the voters in November of 2022, and the plan is to start construction later this year and have an opening sometime in 2026. So we're going to have a brand new, again, state-of-the-art modern library here in downtown, which is going to be another draw and anchor. As part of the funding that we got from the federal government for the American Rescue Plan, we're going to be doing an enhancement at Charter Oak Park, which is on the southern end of Main Street, which is going to include a turf soccer field with lighting. It's going to also include a skate park, which has been long advocated here in Manchester, and a pump track. So we intend this to be sort of regional recreation hub that's going to draw even more people here and contribute to the sense of vibrancy in our downtown. We think it'll, you know, have a positive snowball effect with bringing people in, businesses, people wanting to live here. Very excited about what downtown's going to look like over the next 5 to 10 years.
Absolutely. It's certainly all happening here. Just given us a little bit of a taste of what we can expect. We'll look forward to coming back and revisiting Manchester as it continues to grow. You certainly are making it happen. But in the meantime, Steve Stefano, Town Manager, Chris Silver, Director of Leisure, Families and Recreation, and Kathleen McGuire, Senior Recreation Supervisor, all of the Town of Manchester. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And if you're thinking of paying a visit to the Town of Manchester or maybe entering the Manchester Road Race at Thanksgiving, then visit their website for full details at manchestercity.gov. Connecticut East This Week is made possible by Reality Interactive, helping Fortune 500 businesses connect with their customers through innovative digital tools to help foster strong relationships and deliver data-driven seamless solutions. We help you create memorable digital experiences to bring your brand to consumers in insightful ways. Find out how we can help your digital transformation today at RealityEye, that's RealityEye.com. Thames at Mitchell College, a college transition program on Mitchell's waterfront campus in New London. Mitchell offers a culture of radical possibilities where students with learning or processing differences can thrive, easing into college with supportive faculty and a strong social network. Within this tight-knit living and learning community, Thames students build executive functioning skills, earn college credit, learn strategies for independence, and experience transformative growth. Learn more at Mitchell.edu. And
it's time for the quiet corner to make some noise. Some Day Kimball Health noise. Largest employer in our region kind of noise. Day Kimball Health serves more than 125,000 people, offers cardiology, orthopedics, and oncology specialties. It's having the region's only comprehensive and accredited breast center kind of noise. We're nationally recognized by LeapFrog, Becker's, and the American Heart Association. Day Kimball Health. Healthcare in motion.
The Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling is a nonprofit organization which, through advocacy, prevention, and education, is here to support individuals and families who are impacted by problem gambling. Our helpline, 1-888-789-7777, is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We also have live chat and tech support through our website, www.ccpg.org.
Time now for a look at other stories making the headlines this week. Nonprofits, healthcare, and local businesses came together recently to hear about the childcare crisis in New London County. The county is the fourth largest in the state by way of population, which is much smaller than the top three counties' population density of Fairfield, Hartford, and New Haven. Courtney McNally-Parkerson is a director of the Connecticut Project, a social change organization, and one of the event organizers. Parkerson said there are just over 4,500 childcare slots available in the county, not nearly enough for the actual need.
Almost 8,000 families that are looking for a childcare slot in New London County. And based on the licensed supply, there is more than 40% of those families that are looking for a spot and are not able to find one. For infants and toddlers, it's even more significant. It's roughly half of the families with infants and toddlers that need a childcare spot are not able to find one in New London County because a seat doesn't exist for them.
Business owners at the event event said the situation is having an impact on them finding and retaining employees, especially women, who are staying at home and in some cases leaving the workforce to look after their children instead. Dina Sears-Graves is the president and CEO of United Way of Southeastern Connecticut and said they intend to create a childcare workforce shortage work group, similar to what the state did when it came to boosting the manufacturing industry.
Similar to manufacturing, many strategies were developed throughout the region to get the workforce ready for all the jobs that were available. So what does this look like for childcare? How do we build that pipeline? It will take many, and it will take individuals from all sectors to make this happen.
Another idea being considered for the region is to expand childcare business incubators that exist elsewhere in the state that provide training, funding, and business support, as well as licensing for anyone interested in becoming a childcare provider. Coast Guard Academy cadets in New London and other personnel can now report instances of sexual assault or misconduct without fear of punishment or reprisal. New safe-to-report legislation was passed by the House Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure recently in a 53-3 vote as part of the Coast Guard Authorization Act 2024. U.S. Congressman Joe Courtney was instrumental in helping to introduce the new legislation and said revelations of a buried report by the Coast Guard certainly helped galvanize support for the change.
Fouled anchor report, which was reported on last summer, you know, definitely demonstrated that this is, you know, a serious issue with record of validation by the investigation which the Coast Guard, to its credit, conducted. You know, obviously the manner in which it was held back, I think, is something that the Senate committee is looking at very hard.
Courtney said introducing the new legislation will finally protect Coast Guard personnel, just as the National Defense Authorization Act of 2021 did for other military academies such as West Point and Annapolis.
Incidents of sexual harassment and sexual assault had really spiked up, and Congress took the step forward to, again, provide safe harbor for complainants and victims to come forward and make sure that these events were investigated and sanctioned. So again, because the Coast Guard's legal status is different than the military service academies, that was not included in the 2021 law.
Similar safety report legislation has been introduced in the Senate by Connecticut U.S. Senators Richard Blumenthal and Chris Murphy, and a federal investigation into the buried Operation Fouled Anchor report about sexual misconduct in the Coast Guard is also currently being undertaken by the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. An iconic coffee shop in the city of New London has finally reopened 7 months after it was forced to close because of a fire that ripped through the basement of the property. Muddy Waters on Bank Street closed back in August of last year, leaving the local community without its favorite cafe. David Precker is the owner of Muddy Waters and said it took a lot of work to bring it back both financially and physically.
Unfortunately, the cost is not determined 100% yet. Still in the works and accounting, but the amount of work was from the two level of the basement all the way up. The work was extensive. The entire thing had to be a rehab from the lower basement to the existing basement and the coffee shop floor.
The cafe opened its doors to a line of people, and Precker said he is pleased to be back in business and serving the community. Tara Quinn from Waterford and Benji Suprise from New London were two of over 300 returning customers on the cafe's reopening day.
I really felt it. I mean, I found other places to get out of the house, be it the library or area markets, but there's something special about here because it was also the first place that my husband and I had our date.
It's beautiful. I think I was telling someone earlier, feels elevated. I don't know, I feel a little bougie coming here, but it's a beautiful refurnishing, reinstituting the pillar to the community that this is.
The first Muddy Waters opened back in 2004 in the city, and Precker purchased the business in 2020 when the previous owners decided to retire. And Connecticut College in New London has announced its new president after a nine-month nationwide search. The school's board of trustees announced that Andrea Chapdelaine will begin her tenure as the school's 12th president starting July 1st. Chapdelaine currently holds the position of president of Hood College, based in the state of Maryland. She will succeed interim president Leslie E. Wong, who took over from president emerita Catherine Bergeron, who served as Connecticut College's 11th president from 2014 to 2023 after she resigned her position due to student and faculty protests over her handling of a school fundraiser at a Florida institution they said went against the ideals of the college and caused the resignation of the school's Dean of Diversity and Equity. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East and on Instagram at Connecticut East This Week. And you can listen to the show again on our social platforms, on demand, and by asking your smart speaker to play Connecticut East This Week podcast. And please like, follow, and share on your social media too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.